build up a one. During this period, we also made some of the seminal discoveries in the modern superconductivity business, and still are going great guns at this. We have a three-way joint venture with Los Alamos, Hewlett-Packard, and DuPont, which is doing great. But this science that came out of this is really good. Our solid-state program, and invented whole new classes of frequency doublers and all. That still has some real promise. So I'd say the solid state program we built up has some true commercial promise. There are most of the new chemistry and new processes that have been developed for freon replacements came out of central research programs that are being put in place right now, and a whole lot of specialized things like a room temperature atmospheric pressure, I should say atmospheric pressure, close to room temperature, a synthesis of hydrogen peroxide from the elements. It always seemed to me the way to make hydrogen peroxide was to take hydrogen and oxygen, H2 plus O2, giving H2O. And we actually did that. And the pilot plant has been built looking at that. That was one that I pushed for years to try to get through.
Is it primarily a catalyst problem?
Mm-hmm. So I'd say a fair number of things. we're making about $15 million added right to the bottom line, right straight to the bottom line, in angioplasty catheters, a new type of polyester that's used that is guarantees no burst problems and that sort of thing, and a ultra-high molecular weight, high-density polyethylene that has been given some even additional treatments to toughen it for use as hip replacements or orthopedic devices. There's some total of those two things that CRD is doing itself is adding, as I say, $15 million to the directly to the bottom line. We came up with the first, not the first, but the second, but the best, better than Lee Hood's concept of reading DNA sequences and the Genesis 2000 sequencer, when we couldn't get enough appropriate help in DuPont's pharmaceuticals, we took the floor of a building here at the station, set up a manufacturing facility, and made the first 10 machines ourselves. Then that department took it over, and the boob that got the job took the first devices and placed them, sold them to Communist China and Japan. Well, see, I would have given the first ones away to Paul Burke. You know, the big thing that you want is to get these top Nobel people to say, this is the way to go. And this shows you once it was out of our hands, it was out of our hands. But that was an invention that came entirely out of here. It was really, really super. So there's a lot of things that have looked pretty good. I probably missed some of the big ones, but we realized that our earnings picture was not getting any better over a long period of time. It was dwindling down and down and down, and as this got people's attention more and more towards the late 80s and the early 90s, research took more and more a shot in the chops, and that's as it stands right now. As we started out at the beginning of saying that, it's not clear where we're going, but I don't have the slightest doubt that if the company has an upturn, research will share in that right away.
1990, I think. I'm not clear to me exactly what was happening, but there, yeah. you had a change in your
yeah.
position.
Is that right? Normally, there's an unwritten law that usually is held. I don't know of cases that it hasn't. And that is, you can stay on the executive committee or as a department head for 10 years, and after that they want you to go on. I'd been department head for 11 and a half years, 12 years, 11 and a half years, something like that. And they were getting ready to make a restructuring change here. And what would they have done? They might, rather than go through me being promoted and going through this change and then staying for a year or something like that, I could see that Blanchard was stumbling around wondering what to do, and I said, hey, look, why don't you just put me on as an advisor, and you know, your science advisor, and I'll do that for a while, because I don't intend to stay very long anyway. So nothing at all changed, except that Al took that, took over the CRD, and I had, again, sort of a best of both world things, where I reported to Blanchard for a year. So then Doc was going to retire, and he retired right a couple of months after I did. And I guess we, after, I always said 62, and I was 62 and a half, so I got, once you get out of the main line, the big thing is getting out of the main line. Once I got out of that, I would much rather be doing this. They retain me, they pay me a retainer, and come and go as you want, and it's truly the best of both worlds. So the big change was leaving as department head, and as I said, I'd put in 11 or 12 years, and I think that made them, they were going to make major changes in the way things were done in the company. They were very nice about it, though. Doc, I mean, they retained me as a corporate officer during this whole period and what have you. And I could have stayed on if I'd wanted to stay on now, but I chose to get out of it. So I was, I mean, I was not unhappy with any of this, although the you know, I don't want you to think that I was dumped out. It wasn't that, and I wasn't. It was clearly going to be a new kind of DuPont. I'd been sitting on that committee up there all this time. I didn't agree with a lot of things that was Chief was saying, and it was, it made me feel a lot more comfortable knowing that they were going to have a new attitude towards research, and I didn't want to have to cope with that. So I was really very pleased at the way it all worked out.
What do you do with your time now that you come and go as you please, as you said?
Yeah, I'm involved with local local things, like I was heading a committee overseeing the building of this new chemistry building at Delaware. For the last 6 years, I was president of the University of Delaware Research Foundation, which is a private philanthropic group that raises money to support we call for proposals, and young faculty make grant proposals to us. We have a committee of scientists and go through these and make the decisions as recommendations as to what we're going to support and what we're not. And we normally have about $300,000 to $400,000 a year that we divide up between 15 or so faculty members and give them, these are usually all new faculty, give them a head start sort of thing. That program, that took a fair amount of time. I'm very active on a school board here, independent school, which is where I'm going this afternoon, on the board of the Franklin Institute. I'm seeing you folks. I'm up there once or twice a month, it seems like. I'm on the corporate council of the steering committee for the Corporate Council of Math and Science Education. I'm on the finance. I've been permanently on the finance committee at the academy for some years. This is my third year on the National Science Board. Other things with the NSF, some visiting committees like MIT's, where I've been on it for like 20 some years. The company likes all of these sort of things and thinks that if we're going to have somebody wired into NSF or the government, various government agencies or the academy, or a variety of things. Franklin Institute, we do a lot with, over the years, DuPont's done a lot with him. That this gives someone to do that. And so these are all things I was involved with one way or the other beforehand, so I'm just continuing on doing them.
Sounds like a pretty good
plate. The University of Maryland and University of Delaware's College of Marine Studies, their dean, Carolyn Thorogood, old friend, I've collaborated with her a lot, and I'm a real booster of the Marine Studies College down there. And the same thing at Maryland, which is mainly Chesapeake Bay, I'm on the advisory council for University of Maryland's biology lab. So, you know, you add up all of those things, and it's they're all labors of love, mostly. They're sort of fun to do. Some of them are even useful.
I understand your son's work for DuPont.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to do with it?
In the opposite sense, the both of them went to MIT as undergraduates. One was with Woodward when he died, was one of Woodward's last graduate students. Mm-hmm. And the other one worked for Weiberg at Yale, got his PhD at Yale. And the older one, in particular, he had worked two or three summers here in these summer programs that a lot of the children, employees do. And he really liked the station. He had a good experience working for the old explosives department. And he wanted to come to DuPont, and I warned him against it. And interestingly, the younger one had worked also one summer or two here, I can't remember. But he swore he was never coming back to Delaware. And he was the one that went out and interviewed a whole pile of companies. And he came back and said, "Dad," he said, "none of them were like the experimental station." And I said, "Well, it's up to you guys. You know, it's up to you." I said, I was with Shapiro the other night, and he was asking me about the kids, and he was saying that he absolutely refused to have his son work for DuPont. And I said, "Well, it's a little different with you," I said, "being the chairman." But he said, "I would imagine you'd." And I said, "That's true. It's a two-way sword. Some people hate you for it, that your father was in the general management in the company, and others are inclined to react just the opposite." So I think by now they feel pretty good about it.
I'm curious about their both being chemists, because my experience is very few of the people I've interviewed have children who followed as chemists.
Yeah. Howard started in physics and John started in biology. Howard found the physics too hard and John found the biology too soft. I'm serious, this is really about what happened, and they both ended up by coming to chemistry.
That's interesting.
And Howard is very physically inclined. He spent almost 10 years in the photo products department working on optical discs. This is the Woodward guy. And he's very interested in high-tech recording of optical data and that sort of thing. And the younger one is a polymer chemist and has done extremely well in patent-wise and what have you with the Polymers Department and polyimides and membranes. And the Orr one, just when I, once I left the company, they were looking for a guy with optical background, and so he jumped at the chance to come over here, and so he's over here now in actually CRD.
Does the company have any policy about if you have children in the company that they work in your group? I mean, that they work.
We keep them out of the same department. Until I retired, then it was different then. But that all, you know, started to go by the board because we never had the husband. We wouldn't allow a husband and wife in the same department.
Hmm.
And that broke down in time and whatever. But there were a lot of, there were large number of these family sort of arrangements throughout DuPont, and DuPont sort of likes that. They look on it, it's, I don't know of any cases where this has done any, I don't know of any that's done any harm, DuPont, I think, likes it because they think it breeds loyalty and that sort of thing.
Would you consider DuPont to have a family atmosphere to it? Dow talks about it, the Dow family.
I think it absolutely did. That was the keynote of DuPont, and I think this is what's been lost in the last two or three years. If you talk to the average DuPont employee downtown or out here anywhere else, they'll claim that that's gone. The paternalism that so characterized DuPont has disappeared.
And as you said, breeds loyalty when you have
it. There's a speaking of one thing we didn't cover, probably one of the things I've been prouder of than anything else in the company is recruiting. I have done a lot to bring good people into the company. And some oddball cases where Ed Wasserman, Ed Wasserman at Bell Labs, who became a professor at, do you know Ed?
No, I know the name, I've never met him.
Who became a professor at Rutgers and then straddled both of them and then went full time to Rutgers. Then he became head of corporate research at Allied. And Ed and I were old friends from, I used to visit him at Bell Lab all the time, go up there to give talks and vice versa. Had lunch with him one day in Washington at the Watergate, and after a couple of hours he said, "Hey, how about give me a job?" He said, "I'm tired of it up there." He said, I'd like to have a small group, and I really want to throw myself back into science," which didn't surprise me at all. So I said, "Absolutely." And so Ed came down here, and he is like a science director without portfolio. He's got physicists and biologists and a variety of things doing one thing or the other. There are not many black quantum chemists around. Fred Van Catledge, who was on the faculty in Minnesota, I brought him, Fred, here. But over the years, when I was director of research, I saw every candidate that came through here, and the average director of research didn't even remotely, and the company doesn't even remotely put that kind of time into it. But I saw every candidate that came through. You know, it might only be 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can tell a lot in those 10 minutes. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, is there anything else? You just mentioned one thing that I haven't asked that you wanted to include.
I don't know, Jim. I'm just trying to think. I'm sure the answer to that is yes, that we probably... I you were asking about other activities. Some of the things that I spent a fair amount of time with was in the academy. As a major thing I worked on was that prudent practices in the laboratory, and where after surveying all of these university and company manuals, everybody concluded that the DuPont safety program was so good, why in the hell wouldn't you just write the book from that, which is what happened. And that's been the biggest bestseller the academy has had, the biggest bookseller of any other books.
Well, DuPont's always had this.
Yeah.
His corporate image,
yeah,
throughout even academia,
yeah,
being so safety conscious.
Yeah, it truly is. Just trying to think. I spent a lot of time on this the academy program on misconduct, scientific misconduct. So I've been when I get involved in some of those things, I maybe sometimes put more time than I would have normally. That's one thing that's different. I probably spent a little more time than I normally would.
It's a scientific misconduct, and we see a lot about it now. It's through a number of very famous cases. Is it as much a problem in industry as it is in academia?
No, that's the interesting thing, that the kinds of things that you see in academia, that is plagiarism or scientific falsification of records, none of this happens very often. Occasionally it does. It behooves no one to falsify data, because if it's of any value at all, it'll probably get repeated and then you're doomed. And we did have a case a few years ago that I was involved in, a guy here who published some other people's data from another department, and that got us very upset. There's just no question about it. There is very little of that sort of thing goes on in industry that is among the scientists. I think they just live in an atmosphere where if you're in a big company, a decent company, you're going to get booted out of your ass. You're not just going to get in an argument with a provost. You're going to be out on your butt. And we don't take lightly to those sort of things. Now, there's a different kind of thing where someone falsifies records so that they get a product out and that product does damage or something like this, but I'm talking about just back at the science level, the bench scientist and the bench engineer, the kind of things that we're talking about in the academy study. I think the atmosphere in industry doesn't really foster that. The kinds of competition that you experience in universities are so high that I suspect that has a lot to do with it. People here, they have different kind of pressures, but they're not ones that engaging in scientific misconduct is going to get them to the end. Maybe if it did, they would.
I can imagine that it would almost, that an industry getting caught doing something like that would make it difficult to get a job anywhere else. Does that kind of thing go on?
I don't think so, because DuPont usually doesn't. I'm not sure that they're not laws that, for, you know, unless you have brought this person to court, mm-hmm, and formally charged him, I think you're in deep trouble if you fire somebody and then call up, or somebody else calls and said, this guy's looking for a job, and you say, hey, I got rid of him because he's a thief.
Right.
I don't think you can do. We our legal department would shoot you if you got involved with that sort of thing. Most of the crime I've seen associated with the chemical industry has been just plain crooks. Some guy in middle management who's found a way to capitalize on on something his department is selling, and he's working with another outside guy, and somehow they're splitting the splitting some deal that they've got going, and you see that sort of thing. Once in a while, we've had environmental problems where, unbeknownst to the to even their middle management, some guy lower down has who has consciously violated. We had a case like this that was really embarrassing, a case in the plant where the a low-level supervisor thought he was really doing the company a great favor by dumping something where it shouldn't be dumped. I mean, Jesus, that's like the last thing DuPont wants, you know. So the poor guy is not only as the federal government is after him, and DuPont is not ready to give him anything except a boot.
Well, if there's nothing else at this point, if there is, I'll be glad to keep going. If
no, we've probably exhausted ourselves.
I'd like to thank you for spending the time this morning. I've enjoyed it very much. We'll send you a transcript, and then you can maybe be prompted into adding some other things along the way.
I've seen transcripts of you. I tend to talk, and probably because I think that way, in a very disjointed fashion. I hope you.
Well, I will edit it before you see.
Good, thank goodness, and, because I have to put you to that work. I'll try to figure out what the hell I was saying.
No, I usually edit them so that it reads smoothly.
Tell me about your own background.
Okay, I'm going.